I think human beings are just, yeah, we panic and we make changes at the last minute, unfortunately. But I think the rest of us who know things need to change and are those community builders should just keep going out there though and keep building and making those foundations for that regenerative and resilient community that will come. I think as a parent, you have to believe it will happen.
Hello and welcome to the How to Be Good podcast, the show where we explore what we can do to reduce our impact on the planet and live more sustainably. I'm Gareth, and with me is my co-host, Anchor. So how are you doing, Anchor?
Good, thank you. Thrilled to be here. We had an amazing day recording. How exciting. How are you?
I'm very good. It was such a good day. We were so good to have such a great guest on the show. She's been living a zero-waste lifestyle since 2013. Her blog became one of Australia's most popular eco-lifestyle websites. She's a prominent commentator, consultant on Zero Waste, featured on BBC World, The Project, Sunrise, The Age, The Guardian, and many, many more. She is also the author of two books, Waste Not and Waste Not Every Day, all while being a mum too. So let's get started and welcome Erin Rhodes, aka The Rogue Ginger. Hi, and thank you for joining us on the How to Be Good podcast. And obviously, I hope you're well and managing through these strange and trying times.
Thank you for having me. And yes, we are getting through it day by day, as most people are.
Yeah, so it's a new learning curve, isn't it?
It is. It is. Yeah, definitely. But I'm grateful that I've got family close by. That makes it easier.
Oh, absolutely. It makes a big difference. So we were reading your book, Waste Not, and in the start of the book, we were looking at how your sister, I believe it was, or was it sister or sister-in-law?
Actually, my sister.
Your sister suggested a movie, The Clean Bin Project, which seems to have been the catalyst for where you are now. Could you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah. So the story goes, I was at home in bed with a pretty horrible cold. It was June. I remember it was very cold and rainy. And my sister called me because she'd heard from my mum I was pretty sick. And I just asked her, said, do you have any movie recommendations? And I was hoping she'd give me more like a romantic comedy or something like that. But the night before, she had just been down to her local library to watch a movie called The Clean Bin Project. Right. And it followed a couple from Canada who gave themselves the challenge to buy nothing new for 1 year and create no rubbish for 1 year. And I thought that was a bit crazy. I wasn't really into eco-documentaries and that stuff. I think I'd heard about An Inconvenient Truth, but I'd never seen it because it looked very doom and gloom and the world's ending. But I watched the trailer for this one because my sister, she does have pretty good taste. So I watched it, and the lead has red hair. Now, I've got ginger hair, and so does my sister, and we feel an affiliation to support fellow gingers. I don't know why. Most gingers
I'm feel completely
the same.
With you on that.
Are you?
So I don't know whether you can see us at this moment. Most of my hair's gone, but around my beard you can still see some remnants.
Oh, yes. Yes, I can. Yes. So I watched it. Plus it seemed very funny through the trailer and not like your typical, I guess, environmental film. Mm-hmm. So I sat and I watched it, and it was just a bit more relatable than I guess I expected it to be. It was just a very normal couple who just decided one day that they needed to make some changes in their lives, and they just kept a video diary, and all the changes they made were quite simple. As I was watching it, I was like, oh, I can take my own bags to the store. I can say no to plastic. It was, you know, also learning about the devastating effects plastic has on the environment and on people as well. It was very hard for me to unsee all the plastic in my life once the movie ended. I remember when my boyfriend, now husband, he brought me over some takeaway that night, and it was just all in plastic, and opened up my cupboards and it was all plastic, and I just couldn't stop just seeing it everywhere. So about a week later, I looked up a way that I can reduce my plastic, and that's how I found Plastic Free July.
Oh, yeah. So that's the WA. It's a not-for-profit, I believe, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. And so did you partake in the Plastic Free July yourself? You set yourself the challenge?
Yes. So I did Plastic Free July, my first one, in 2013. Right. Back then, I was one of, like, I think less than 400 people. I was one of the first few on the East Coast. Most people who did it were in WA. And
yeah.
Now it's worldwide and moons of people do it. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. There's such a learning from just taking that step. So one of the other things as well is I don't know how you felt when you first started looking at the plastic side of things, but did you feel the guilt as well about having so much plastic in your life and not realizing perhaps earlier what it was doing to the environment?
Yeah, I did. I did have some guilt, which I think is quite normal. It's a normal process to go through. And then that guilt quickly turned to anger when I would see other people using plastic and not being aware.
Yeah.
But then I realized that anger is useless, and instead I chose to funnel that frustration into doing a plastic bag ban here in Victoria. So I worked with some people and we lobbied the government and collected over 10,000 signatures, and it was the largest petition to go to the state parliament in over a decade. And then we got a bag ban. So it just shows if you use your energies right, you can try and make some change somewhere.
Yeah, that was a fantastic achievement. And that's now started to be rolled out across most states. We're in WA here, we've got the plastic bag ban as well. And I think it's virtually national now as well.
Yes, it is. Yep, it's national. I think every single state. And next will be hopefully more single-use plastics.
Yeah. So are you lobbying the government on other aspects as well at the moment and pushing the government to move in the right direction?
Yeah, so I was working with a group to do cash for containers, which Victoria is sadly lagging behind in a lot of that stuff. And we annoyed them enough that they finally announced they will be rolling that out. But I think it's going to be pushed back because of COVID.
Yeah.
And I think this year we will be pushing for a single-use plastic ban because WA's set a target, South Australia, yeah. Queensland as well. So there's no reason why Victoria can't follow this, and we should initially make it nationwide. But
yeah.
Unfortunately, the state governments look yes. after these things.
Yeah, yeah. So Queensland just announced theirs just recently, didn't they?
Yes.
Maybe only a few weeks ago, which is fantastic news.
I find it so hard to get rid of plastic. We've been trying lots and lots of buying from the markets and buying bulk and all these things, and we still end up with a lot of especially soft plastic bags and single use. How did you find it at the beginning?
Oh, well, at the beginning, I think it was a lot different for me as well. You know, when I go back 8 years ago, there weren't as many bulk food stores.
Okay.
And there wasn't as much, you know, going up and getting your drinks or your food to go in reusables wasn't normal like it is now. We hadn't watched the war on waste yet. Like, that created such a big conversation in this country, where before people would be like, why don't you want plastic? And you'd make up silly excuses like, oh, I'm allergic to it, stuff like that, just to get around it. But at the beginning, because there weren't as many options, you had just to do it very slowly. And more often than not, you just had to go without. So yeah. We just went without a lot of stuff at the beginning, which is hard. So I think I've still got that mentality where I feel I don't have as much available to me, even though there is a lot more availability for plastic-free. At least there is in Melbourne at the moment.
Do you find it more expensive?
No, I don't find it more expensive. And again, there's reasons for this. I think, yeah, I'm still stuck in that mentality where I don't have as much available to me. My husband's also got some food intolerances, so I can't buy as much. So we're quite limited when we do go shopping. I do find things like treats to be a little bit more expensive. But luckily my son's still quite young, and if he's nagging me for like some junk food or something, I can distract him with something else.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm sure that'll change in the future. I'm being a lot harder.
We've got a 10-year-old. It's become quite trying. But he's generally getting on board.
Well, that's the thing. Like, kids do, I guess, learn about this in school. Like, it's a popular topic. It's kind of a bit more mainstream for them, where I think my generation, all we had was Captain Planet, and it was about nuclear waste and stuff like that. So
that's right. That's right. I mean, you're talking about parties, the level of waste, single-use plastic cutlery, plastic plates, cups, now that we've sort of started this road.
Mm.
And I notice you have that you have some bits about that in your book. How do you get around sort of those sort of out-of-house party-type function situations?
Well, if I'm going to somebody else's house or party and there is a big amount of waste in plastic, I don't say anything, only because I know that, you know, I might say something that I think is quite nice and kind, but the other person could think that I'm shaming them in some way, and I don't want anyone to ever start, you know, feeling guilty, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I guess the only other thing you can do is when you host a party and that person comes along and you do things differently, they might see or have conversations. You've really got to, I guess, be that change you want to see in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there have been instances where I've, you know, gone to a friend's party and all they've had is just like plastic plates and cups, and me and my husband will kind of go up to the host and say, do you mind if we just grab a real plate and cup from your kitchen and we'll wash it up at the end? And then they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, I should have done real plates and cups and, you know, stuff like that. Well, no, it's okay. We don't want to shame you or anything like that. We're just trying to stick to this plastic-free life that we have. And or sometimes we'll bring our own, like, picnic stuff as well if we're going. But, like, if it was my son going to a party, I would try and encourage him not to say anything, because obviously kids get to a certain point where they might like to be a bit,
yeah.
My mummy told me this and what you're doing is bad, so kind of thing, which could leave him with no friends.
Yeah, yeah, that's not the upside of the whole situation.
Yeah, yeah. So I think really you've just got to, I guess, if you're lucky to have that party, just to show others how it can be done. Another option is to ask the school if they would be interested in bringing in a speaker who might want to do like a talk after school to parents about how to have a low-waste kids party and stuff like that. So I've done that with a couple of schools. Just some parents have invited me in and I have a chat with some kids, you know, and just show them other ways that they can do things.
Absolutely. I think that's a fantastic idea. With our local school there, so we interviewed maybe 10 or so or 12 of the children in sort of around 10-year-old mark about what they thought of climate change, what they'd learnt about it and so forth. And I'd say the predominant answer that they came back with was, we must recycle. And there was no knowledge, I guess, at that stage that if we didn't use in the first place, we wouldn't need to recycle, as in recycle is not the answer. It helps, but it's not the solution itself.
Exactly, exactly. I think, that's where you need other people, I guess, coming in or watching a movie, you know. Movies and documentaries are a great way to kind of, you know, break down really hard conversations and make them accessible. You know, there's, and I've noticed with my son's TV, there's a lot more of that messaging kind of going in as well. So, which is good.
Yeah. Movies have made a big impact. They did in our lives. It was actually The Inconvenient Truth that made us really start to change our journey, change our diet and everything. What other movies would you suggest that you've seen that could help along this path?
Well, ones related to like plastic, I find quite helpful are Bag It. It's an older movie, well, not too old, maybe like 10 years old, but it's by a comedian, so it's quite funny. Yeah. He's going to be a new dad, and he starts wondering about what kind of life he's going to leave for his child. But there's a lot of humour throughout it, so I think that helped, and it really helped my husband realized, well, boyfriend at the time realized why I was this plastic-free lady. Another one, A Plastic Ocean, which is really quite moving. I haven't met anyone who hasn't watched that without crying.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that is that's got quite an assault to the senses.
Certainly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can put that in front of my nearly six-year-old just
no.
yet.
but the War on Waste, they did a kids' version as well.
That's right. Yeah, and you were heavily involved with the War on Waste. Was it a consultant was your role?
Yeah, yeah. So I spoke with the producers. I was, gosh, like 8 months pregnant. And, yeah, we just sat down. I just told them everything. I kind of knew what I thought people would respond to, really, and just introduced them to a whole bunch of people that they should get in touch with for the series because I was not going to be on it.
It's not something you wanted to do being 8 months pregnant hot weather and so forth. good fun. No, it was a great, great documentary.
Talking about kids, how easy it is to be zero waste with kids in comparison to without them?
Oh, I'll admit it's harder with kids simply because you've got to negotiate with a little human about why we're perhaps not using certain things or, you know, at the beginning, cloth nappies and all that. But looking back now, it wasn't that difficult because I made things simple for myself. My husband was right on board with cloth nappies from the start, thankfully. So I always had his help to wash them and we used the very simple version. And so it wasn't too hard with that. But he didn't go into daycare, so we didn't have to worry about, I guess, having those conversations with daycare staff about cloth nappies, which I know a lot of people get nervous about.
Yeah.
Food was very easy. You know, I did things like baby-led weaning and so he just ate real food kind of from the beginning. And toys, secondhand toys. I think it was more like talking to other people about it. Like so many people said to me before my son came along, you won't be able to do this anymore. It'll be too hard, too exhausting. And I was like, right, well, you don't know how stubborn I am. So this feels like a challenge. but it's been more like just having conversations with others. I think, you know, obviously family members want to lavish gifts onto you and you've got to say, no, we're okay. He doesn't need toys. Like op shops have got so many toys. And kids really don't need that many toys.
No, not at all. And they get bored of them so quickly.
They do. They do. Like my son's favorite toy at the moment is my basket of pegs for the clothesline. He just loves making little things with them. That's the thing with kids. Anything can become a toy to them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we've noticed through our journey that we've changed a lot from plastic to glass. Can we talk a bit about it? Is it better to go towards glass containers?
Well, it depends. So at the moment in Australia, a lot of glass is being kind of downcycled just because of the way they collect it in the trucks. It, you know, glass needs to be recycled by colour. And when it gets compacted into the recycling trucks, it's really smooshed in there and so it breaks. And if the recycling company has got an optical sorter, then they can hopefully pick out the different colours, but often they can't. So it's used in the construction industry and like road bases.
Yeah.
But if you can reuse that glass, then that's fantastic. But I understand a lot of people will use glass, but then they don't always have a use for it. As if they can pass it on in like a buy nothing new group or something like that.
Yeah.
So I guess in terms of that, you know, it's weight, the emissions. So glass is great if you're going to reuse it, but obviously probably not the best if it's just going to be recycled. But having said that, Australia is now investing a lot more heavily in recycling. And I know a lot, there are some big recycling firms who are setting up more glass recycling in the country. And I envision that a lot more of the glass we see on our shelves will start to have more recycled content in it. So that's happening.
Yeah. Do you think that's a direct result of us not being able to literally just put our waste on a boat and send it off to other countries to deal with?
Yes.
Excellent. I think it needed to happen personally.
Yeah, and our country's done pretty well responding to that. A lot of countries haven't responded to that, and the Australian government, they've thrown a bit of money. They could throw a lot more, but it's good to see that they're doing something and they're starting to put those bans into place and create an industry here. There's no reason why we can't recycle that glass back into the glass we see on the shelves.
Certainly. No, that would be fantastic. So on your zero waste journey, have you had sort of much kickback from, say, family and friends or colleagues?
Yeah, from family at the start, definitely I did, which really baffled me at the beginning. But I quickly realized the reason why they were pushing back against me was because I guess they knew deep down they needed to make a change, but they weren't ready.
Yeah. So it's almost confronting for them to realize that they shouldn't be doing it and didn't really want to perhaps acknowledge it at that stage.
Exactly. Because I would come in and I'd be all happy and cheery and saying, I just love being zero waste. You know, I feel like my life is so much better. And then I guess for people, I guess once I came out as zero waste as well, because I was plodding along with this for a little while before a lot of people found out. Mm-hmm. And they're probably like, oh, gosh, I'm going to make a lot of changes, but I'm not ready to give up X, Y, Z just yet. And so, we'd hang out and they'd be like, oh, well, there's plastic in your phone or there's plastic in your computer or what about plastic, you know, pipes and stuff like that, and be really maddening. I'm like, well, that's not the kind of plastic I'm talking about. It's, and if I can, I'd get a secondhand phone after this and stuff. But it was just, people weren't ready, I guess, to think about this. But then all my family have made huge changes and it's just happened. And soon they would send me pictures of them at the deli getting their food in their reusable containers and, getting their stuff fixed and stuff like that. So it did happen. I guess it goes back to that whole leading, just showing people your life and just being like, look, I can do this, and I've chipped away slowly and I've made some changes.
Sort of show people how to do it but not preach is probably the better way to get reaction and to get action in the long run.
Exactly. It's it can be confronting to make a big change and you've just got to let people, I guess, find their own way.
But it's a lovely step change that people are seeing it more. And as we were talking about the kids earlier, that kids are a lot more knowledgeable about these sort of things than we ever were. I mean, when I was young, there was really nothing said about it at all.
Yeah. And if it was, it was kind of the hippies and they were on the fringe, absolute fringe of society kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm so pleased that we're moving in the right direction. So are you seeing, when we talked before, just going back about the financial side of things, and also you're working with businesses on their waste as a consultant, how are they working towards reducing their waste, and what are sort of their key drivers?
Well, yeah, financial is a big one. But for businesses, I think here in Australia, there's not a lot of support yet. Things like getting a separate business to come and, say, pick up your food scraps can be expensive. But then on the flip side, encouraging customers to bring their own containers, maybe getting rid of a certain type of serviette and replacing with something a bit more eco-friendly might save them a bit more money.
Yeah.
It's just making small changes like that. But I think for them it's more finding the time as well. And I think in reality what needs to happen is local councils will have to hire someone to come and work with them in their area, I think, because each area's got different needs, different obstacles, a different type of culture and communities and stuff like that as well, which I find a bit harder. So I'm starting to see some councils, some of the more progressive, who will hire someone to, and that's their focus, is to come and kind of work street by street with businesses. They've done the research, show them the costing, found suppliers for them to make them fit their business. But in the end, it is a cost saver because you've got like a small takeaway shop can spend over $7,000 a year on those takeaway containers, which is a huge amount of money. So if everyone started bringing their own containers, like I always hear how back in like the 70s and early 80s, a lot of Aussies would bring their pots and pans to the Chinese restaurant to get their takeaway. But then with the Uber Eats, there's something that needs to happen there. We've got like programs like Returner, which is like a metal container, like a bowl, and it comes, I think, with just like a cardboard lid. And then they get collected, I think, through – it's not Uber Eats. It's the other one, another takeaway.
Is it Deliveroo?
Yeah. So they get picked up. So I think we're going to need some more stuff like that pop up. But that's really going to – that I think that's going to be the hard part. I think if we didn't have Deliveroo and Uber Eats, it would be a lot easier.
Certainly, yeah. But that sort of – you know, you perhaps do a one-time purchase of the container, and then that's a rotating one that so they deliver something and they collect yours to go back to be reused again. So that process would be fantastic if it could be set up more readily available.
I agree. And I think that might be where government might need to step in and provide some financial incentives, because speaking to some businesses, they don't have the space to put those kind of systems in. Or to maybe for stuff to go somewhere to get washed commercially and then sent back to these venues. So, like, some smaller businesses will need help. The bigger chains might have the money to roll it out.
Yeah. Well, with the bigger chains, if they see that the public want that and enough people want it, then they'll do it because they don't want to lose customers. So it's got to be a supply and demand set up in some ways, with then the help from the government to enact it.
Yes, and I think COVID has put a pause to that. I think quite a lot of people have lost faith. You know, they're a bit scared that they'll get sick. But then obviously I guess people are a bit more vigilant about washing as well these days.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Have you consulted for local councils?
I'm not consulted, but I've worked alongside them. I usually come and I'm the one who will talk to the community or a group of businesses just about what they can do as an individual to make changes, which is a lot of fun, which I love, love, love to do. But usually I'm finding there will be more likely someone from council who will work alongside and that will know them, because they're usually quite involved with the local business scene as well.
We look at Europe as an example and the way the local councils manage waste and recycling. You're provided bins for most of the household items and they're collected from home. Do you know if any councils do this in Australia?
All councils in Australia look after the waste for local residents. So they're the ones who set up all the recycling contracts or waste collection contracts. Here.
Okay. So, but not all items are collected from home. So you have to drive
to a certain
facility to drop this off, have to drive to another certain facility to drop another product off and so on.
So like, I guess like places like Switzerland, there's a lot more of that, and Sweden. But I guess people pay for that as well. So
yeah, they do have higher taxes.
Like in places like Switzerland, you go, I think it's to like their local post office, and there's three types of bin bags. They come in three different sizes, so the more rubbish you make, the higher charge you are for that bag. And so they don't really have garbage bins. It just goes into this plastic bag and sits out on the road. And I remember I wrote an article about this years ago for 1 Million Women, and a lot of people commented and said, I don't want this here in Australia. Why should I have to pay for a garbage bag kind of thing? So I think our view on what like our responsibility is not as innate as, say, perhaps in Europe, where people seem like in Germany, people don't mind going to take their bottles to be sorted by themselves, where in Australia I think people would be quite upset if you had to do that. But I think it's going to come down to funding for that, definitely.
Certainly. Yeah, I mean, as Anka alluded to before, I mean, I remember when I was younger, and then it came back in later back in the UK, that we would have it was selling juices and drinks and things like that, and they would come around with their bottles, and you'd give the bottle back to them when they came, and they would have, I think, I don't know, 10 pence or whatever it was for a return. But we seem to have lost some of that almost community side of things, and if that could come back, I think we'd be able to do a lot more as well.
Yes, I agree. I mean, we've got, like, say in Melbourne, like, my council has a lot more places to drop off hard to recycle items, and they're trying to place them in easy to get to locations like libraries and stuff. But I guess still in Australia, there was one kind of system set up here in Melbourne where people could drop off their, like, small electronics for recycling in a local library, and it just became a dumping ground because people didn't care. So I think there needs to be a big shift here in Australia, our mentality, and just, taking more responsibility for things. But then that also goes back to, like, you know, the way some of our stuff is made to break rather than made to repair.
Absolutely.
And to last. So there's that as well. I mean, right now the federal government has a submissions paper for the right to repair. So the more of us that get to that submission and fill it out and make a comment, the more likely the government will start putting in tougher laws to say when you are manufacturing things, when we're importing things, they have to be repairable.
Yep. Oh, that is a fantastic. I mean, you know, it was even things like washing machines and things like that recently that you know, you have something as simple as a drive belt go, and you'd phone up the repair people and they'd say, look, it's just not worth it. The charges that they're telling us for the parts, buy a new machine, and it was just so wasteful.
Yeah, it's really, really disheartening because you think about the person who probably made the machine probably wasn't paid well.
Yeah.
And then it's like shipped out here and we use it. And, you know, that person might have thought, I'm going to make this to last. It's going to last a long time. All my work's going into this. And then it comes out here and it lasts for like 5 years and it breaks and then it gets sent off. So when you repair something, you're not just valuing the resources, like the materials, you're also not valuing the person who made it originally, who wasn't probably paid great, you know? Mm. So that's why I'm really passionate about repairing, because there is the human side to it as well. I'd feel pretty sad if I was a person making a lot of the stuff that gets sent out here to the global north, and it's just really made to break, to make someone even richer.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree.
We had final question for you, a couple of them. If there is one thing that we can change that will make a massive impact on our planet's health, what would that be and how can we be good?
Well, when it comes to waste, I'm going to say food. Project Drawdown recently said that if we can tackle our food waste, then that would have a significant impact. So for many of us, it can be as simple as writing a shopping list, making a meal plan, so that we're not buying more than what we need, and then come up with some creative ways that we can use up that food, eating leftovers and composting. So start a compost or a worm farm if you can. If you don't have the space, join up with sharewaste.com. It's a community website where people can find others in their community that will take their compost for them, which is a really great incentive. And, yeah, I think composting, if we can just do more about food waste. And if you've got excess food that you're not going to eat, pass it on to people in need. So you've got an app. It's not as popular yet here in Australia, but I hope it becomes really popular. It's called Olio X or Olio. And if you've got any food you're not going to eat, you can just snap a picture, upload it, and someone in your community can take it. Or you can pass it on in like a Buy Nothing new group or a local Facebook community group as well. So there's no need for food to go to waste. There's so many ways that we can, there's so many different choices we can make every day to reduce that food waste.
Oh, that's fantastic. What I'll do is I'll look that up, and for everybody trying to remember these things that are listening, I'll put those in the show notes. One other question I had is understanding that you've got a young family and looking to their future, what What is the thing that keeps you up at night?
Oh, gosh. as a parent, that's hard. I really want my son's future to be more community-minded and really just thinking about how our actions can really affect another human being or another living being. You know, every action has a reaction. And I hope that, I get nervous that with so much media and distractions that we're just going to lose sight of thinking that way. So I'm really adamant about trying to teach my son to just to think about every choice that he makes does have a reaction. It can either be for good or for bad, and to try and pick the one that's for good.
Fantastic. One last one before I pass over to Anika. Are you optimistic about our future globally and also here in Australia, that we can make the changes that are necessary, but also within the time that we need to do it?
I'm optimistic we'll make the changes. Definitely. I think I have to be. And when I'm surrounded by so many community groups and community action groups wanting to do good and doing great stuff at a local level, it's hard not to be optimistic. Whether we do it in time, I'm not convinced. I think, unfortunately, Australia and the world will probably panic, I think, as things start to change. I mean, here in Victoria, it's usually really hot this time of year, like really hot, and it's been quite cold. Me and my husband have been in jumpers at the beach.
We'd quite happily swap you right now. Yeah. 30 something degrees sweltering, and it's only 9 in the morning.
I think it's 18 right now and it's almost midday, so which is very strange. But I think human beings are just, yeah, we panic and we make changes at the last minute, unfortunately. But I think the rest of us who know things need to change and are those community builders should just keep going out there though and keep building and making those foundations for that regenerative and resilient community that will come. I think as a parent, you have to believe it will happen.
Yeah. Me personally, I'm massively excited about the level of innovation that's happening and how many more people are getting on board to make this change. And I think it's actually a very exciting time as well, a bit worrying too, but very, very exciting in terms of all the levels of innovation that are happening and the numbers of people all over the world that are getting involved to try and make this happen.
Yeah, I agree. It is very exciting.
Thank you so much for your time today, Erin. It has been wonderful to speak to you. We have learned a lot from today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Erin, for being on our show. Looking at food waste, one thing to change this week, here are some stats. An estimated 1.3 billion tons of food is wasted globally each year. This is one-third of all food produced for human consumption. This costs $2.6 trillion annually and is more than enough to feed all the 815 million hungry people in the world four times over. Details in the show notes, a link to the submission for the right to repair. Please make your submission on this. It is very important. We also have links to Erin's books, Waste Not and Waste Not Every Day. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us on Facebook and Instagram and get involved in our How to Be Good Future podcasts. Until next time, stay safe. Bye.
Until next time. Bye-bye.